Welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show that lifts the lid on New Zealand's distilling magic. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf, your guide to the flavours, the people and the inspiration behind our top local spirits. We'll hear what drives these distillers to create their signature blends and maybe discover a new favourite along the way. So whether you're a gin lover or a whiskey wizard, join us on the ride and always keep it classy and drink responsibly. Kia ora and welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf. I'm Susie Carrig from the NZ Spirit Guide. Today, we're heading over the Rimutaka Hill to Martinborough in South Wairarapa, a region best known for its wine, but also home to a growing number of innovative distilleries doing things their own way. One of those is Dr. Beak, founded by husband and wife duo Lacey and Tim, a brand that blends curiosity, garden-grown ingredients, and a slightly playful take on what a gin distillery can be. Lacey, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Susie. Nice to be here.
Wonderful. Right. Now, before Dr. Beak came along, what were you and Tim doing, and what did life look like before distilling entered the picture?
All right. Well, life tends to always be hectic. So I do recall it was quite hectic back then. So it was 2017 when we were entertaining the idea of launching, of creating gin. Tim was a winemaker, still is. And I was stay-at-home mum with three kids. I was studying horticulture and really kind of, busy time with little kids. And I was really thinking about how and what was I going to do once the kids were older, and how could I work with, get away with working with plants.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the idea of how did you go from working with plants to a distillery though?
Yeah. Well, so that's where it was, so I guess with Tim and his alcohol production knowledge, and I've always had a passion for craft and design and that kind of thing. So it was really, gin making became that bridge between science and craft. And so that was really that moment. But from what I remember, it was really Tim who sent a message one day to me and said, should we make gin? And I was like, well, yeah, let's do it. So that's kind of like, okay, yeah, perfect. That was... Yeah.
So that was the defining moment that you decided to take the leap, and where did you build from there?
Well, there was a lot of mucking around in the backyard. We were like, okay, we could grow the plants ourselves. That was cool. But so then we bought a little two liter alembic still. So lots of mucking around in the backyard, tinkering. At that point we were living in Marlborough, so we were working closely, we were able to work closely with Ben Leggett from Elemental Distillers. He was about a year or so ahead of us and more than happy to share his knowledge, as he still is to this day. So it's been quite a bit of time tinkering. In fact, 3 years of tinkering before we launched the brand.
Right. I was going to say, yeah, how long was it from the tinkering to when you actually launched? Now, I have to ask about the name and logo. Dr. Beak, with your logo featuring a Kia, it's very distinctive. Where did the idea come from? And is there a story or a meaning behind it?
Yeah, totally. Always a story with us. Yes. So the name Dr. Beak, the motivation for the name really came from the botanicals that 17th century plague doctors put into their beak-shaped masks, things like lavender and juniper and other strong-smelling herbs and spices, thinking that the plague was spread by foul-smelling air and that these beautiful herbs and spices would help to protect them. Not the case. But also just a little bit later in time was when gin was making waves for all the wrong reasons in the UK, well, kind of like became a thing, right? And so really the name Dr. Beak for us is a nod to history, but isn't who we are as a business. So we, right from outset, we decided that we'd donate a portion of profit to Forest and Bird, So we give 5% of profit to Forest and Bird. We also, you know, selecting our botanicals for their ability to be grown here in New Zealand, basically just love for nature, right? And so we thought that we would put our fun and quirky spin on the name Dr. Beak.
Right.
And, yeah.
That's very cool. Now, like we just discussed, you've been around for a number of years now. You launched right before the gin boom was sort of taking off here in New Zealand. Now, a lot of distilleries that started around the same time as you in the gin have now branched out into whiskey, rum, vodka, all sorts. What's kept you solely focused on gin?
Right. Well, I know that Tim, if Tim was answering that question, he would say, let's make whiskey. But for me, it's the botanicals. I just love working with plants and being able to express so creatively with them, using them in different ways. And who knows, maybe down the track we might. But yeah, right now we are true to gin.
You're a gin distillery. Absolutely. Okay, now one of the things that I love is that you're still pushing boundaries even within the gin space, and your umeshu really stands out. For those who might not know what it is, what is umeshu and what inspired you to create your own version?
Okay, so our take on umeshu is, and excuse my pronunciation for anyone who is Japanese or speaks Japanese, because I do apologize. We make umeshu in, I guess, what would be the most natural way possible, as we do with all of our products. So we're making it in what's called the honkaku style. So that's using ume, which is a Japanese plum or Japanese apricot variant. We're using an alcohol base, so that's our garden gin, and rock sugar. So basically, it's a liqueur. But we're just using a gin base, really. So right. Gin liqueur, put the gin, put the fruit, put the sugar all together and leave it to rest for almost 10 months. And then in that time, the sugar dissolves slowly, which helps to push the alcohol through the stone of the fruit. And then it, yeah, draws out all sorts of kind of very fruity almond, apricot,
And where do you get the plum, the plummy apricot, the Japanese umu, you said?
Ume.
Ume. Yeah. Where do you get the ume from?
They are from New Zealand grown, just north of the Kapiti Coastway, I believe. I was letting our grower that we source them from keep his location secret.
Fair enough.
We work with someone based in Lower Hutt. All sorts of wonderful fruit and kind of exotic plants that he's happy to share. And
Who knew that these fruit even existed? Now, how does it sit alongside your gin range? Is it something that you see as a crossover for gin lovers, or is it a completely different experience? Or is this something perhaps that suits the non-gin drinkers?
I feel like it could sit in all of those camps, really, Susie. It's definitely not gin, in that it is, you know, we have added fruit, we have added sugar. Definitely liqueur. You do get some of sort of those slight herbaceous notes from our garden gin that do come through, but it is definitely more about the fruit. It's something that you might sip at the end of a meal, or a number of people say pour over ice cream. So I think it does definitely appeal to non-gin drinkers.
Yeah, I can
as well as gin drinkers.
Yeah. Absolutely. I must say it is delicious. Okay, now let's talk about your juniperus. What makes it different from a more classic gin, and what can people expect when they taste it?
Okay, so just jumping back a tiny step. So our umeshu, juniperus, they are two products from our what we call our exploration series. So this for us is where we are selecting a hero botanical, building the product around that to really showcase that botanical. So the the ume shoe being all about the, very much about the ume. And juniperus is very much about the hero of gin, juniper. So right. Because it is a slightly, well, it is, it's the most classic gin botanical. And for us, we couldn't just use it, you know, conventionally, traditionally. So what we've done is we've soaked that juniper in the neutral spirit that we use for 6 months prior to distillation. So putting that into context, we would normally soak the juniper for 24 hours. So 6 months is quite extreme, and basically just curiosity is what has driven us to make this, you know, trying to see how far we can push the juniper, and are we extracting more, or what are we achieving by soaking it for that long? So, but it's really just all science experiments. Anyway, so juniperus is bold, rich juniper notes. You know, that long soak that really does help to add richness. And then we've added freshly cracked juniper into the vapor basket day of distillation, so you're getting those fresh pine resin sort of citrus notes from that. And then and also added a touch of orris root, New Zealand grown orris root, so that beautiful flavor binding botanical that brings you know, really helps with mouthfeel and lengthening that finish with a earthy floral profile itself.
Mm-hmm. Very, very nice. And so what do people expect when they actually taste it?
Rich juniper. But I mean, and classic in style, because it does hit those notes of, yeah, it is 100% juniper forward, like bold juniper.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're finding citrus notes, you're finding earthy notes, and, yeah, lengthy finish.
So it's definitely that gin for a gin and tonic.
Ah, really classic gin and tonic, banging dirty martini if you're into that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
But
right.
Otherwise, just a, you know, classic Indian tonic water, loads of ice. Fresh lemon, yeah.
Perfect, sounds delicious. Right, now I have to ask about your juniper shrubbery, partly because it's a great name. What is it and how did the idea come about?
So the idea originally came from us when we were trying to choose gin botanicals, right? So it's like, there's the world's your oyster as long as it's edible and we can import pretty much anything here in New Zealand. So very, very early on, we decided that we would only use botanicals that could be grown here in New Zealand. Obviously, juniper is not a commercially available, juniper berries aren't commercially available here in New Zealand, New Zealand grown yet. So we thought, why not give it a go and grow some ourselves?
Now, correct me in my understanding, juniper used to be in New Zealand, there used to be a lot of juniper around the 70s and 80s, but then the trees became unpopular, so everyone cut them out, and now there's almost this sort of resurgence of regrowing all this juniper again. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, that's my understanding too, Susie. Almost to a T, you know, it was used as a horticultural plant, but I guess texturally in a landscape design world, one can achieve that with using something that's not so so spiky, for lack of better words. So there is, I do believe there is a resurgence in people wanting to grow it for that commercial reason of the juniper berries. So we have about 50 saplings in the ground. They are young, and I don't know. I mean, again, another experiment, because we don't know what we're going to get from it, whether we're actually going to, how much we're going to get from it, how long it will take, all these variables, all these unknowns. But it is a vision that we, you know, that is unwavering. We will continue to strive for New Zealand grown juniper in at least one of our products.
Yeah, wow, that's very exciting. Now, there's clearly a strong garden influence in what you do. How much are you growing or experimenting with yourselves, and how much does that shape the final product?
So at this moment, we are definitely still establishing establishing gardens or botanical plantings. Mm-hmm. We're not using anything in any of our products at this point, just because we asked. I mean, we only launched a brand back in 2020. We're planting on our home block here in Martinborough, and you know, very exposed Wairarapa conditions, so things are slow.
Right.
So we kind of have to establish some shelter belt planting and that kind of thing before we can really get too stuck into it, but working on it. So we've got juniper in the ground. I do have some orris root that I'm growing. And then we will look to use other botanicals, and what exactly those will be is open. Open to discussion really at this point. But what are the ultimately what we would love to create, what my sort of ultimate goal is, to create a single site botanical gin. So you talk single vineyard wine and that sense of place, and very much Beak is, and our creations are about place. So we will be looking to plant, and whether that determines a certain product is, yeah, as I said, open to discussion.
Yeah, right, because that was going to be my other question. Did you move on to a block with sort of established gardens that you've sort of gone, oh, I can use that as a botanical, or are you now planting so that you can go, oh, I'd love to use that as a botanical?
Yeah, and it's definitely the latter. So we bought a piece of land here in Martinborough, bare paddock, just a small strip of roadside acacia. And so then that, I mean, blank canvas, totally. What I'm trying to do is, obviously, we'll be trying to return as much of our property back to natives as possible. And my vision is to, you know, so that I can one day go for a bushwalk on a home block. Wow. And then, you know, walk through some native bush and then come out into a glade of botanicals, you know, whether it's juniper or, you know, citrus or just other herbs or other whatever. But basically trying to, but also then could use those native botanicals to forage from as well, is the idea, so that we know that they're not, you know, that we can be sustainable with sourcing from them and what have you.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. Okay, so where is that curiosity taking you next? Are there any sort of ideas or experiments or slightly unusual projects under the way?
Always. Always looking for the next weird and wonderful botanical that can be grown here in New Zealand. Again, like, we've reduced our pool of botanicals by trying to just use New Zealand grown where we can. At the moment, the only botanical that we're importing is the juniper.
Yeah.
And we want to keep it that way. So looking around, definitely looking around the country to see what what is grown and where, and always ideas. I'm not going to give too much away here, Susie, as you can see, I'm being particularly cagey.
No, fair enough. Right. Finally, it's the end of the working week. Your tools are down, the bottles are lined up, and it's time for a pour. What's your go-to Dr. Beak drink, and how do you like to enjoy it?
Oh, okay. It depends on the mood, really. What kind of a week was it, Susie?
it was a classic Friday.
Classic Friday. Okay. Well, it would be a gin and tonic, and it would be probably whatever's lined up first there. You know, it would be a really classic juniper with, like I said, Indian tonic water or a garden gin G&T. But I feel like this Friday could be a Negroni. It's only Tuesday.
It's a short week. I'm already aiming for the Negroni.
So Dr. Beak premium gin. You know, equal parts premium gin, red vermouth, and Campari. Yeah. Twist of orange. big cube of clear ice.
Yeah, no, you can't beat a Negroni, that's for sure. Lacey, it's been such a pleasure. What really stands out with Dr. Beak is your sense of curiosity, staying true to gin, but constantly finding new ways to explore it, whether it's experimenting with umeshu Rethinking juniper, or literally growing ideas in the garden. It feels thoughtful, a little bit playful, and very grounded to where you are. It's a brilliant reminder that you don't have to follow the crowd to make something special. You can carve out your own path by bringing people along for the journey. So thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, thanks, Susie. Thanks for having me.
Right, now, if you'd like to get your hands on a bottle of Dr. Beak, head to nzspiritguide.com to explore and buy direct. Or for those of you out there who are already a fan of Dr. Beak, go and rate and review it at NZ Spirit Guide and let us know what you think. Your thoughts help others discover their next favourite pour. Until next time, support local, buy direct, drink responsibly, and keep your top shelf full of stories.
That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more behind the bar stories.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.